Hello and welcome to The Enthusiast, the internet's premier hate-free zone, a one-stop shop for entertainment. Every week or thereabouts, we'll go through what we're currently enjoying in the worlds of film, TV, music, games, comics, and general pop culture. I'm your host, Power Man Kieran Shiak, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Iron Fist Sean Keeney.
And with every show, the following podcast will contain swearing, spoilers, and some incredibly bad jokes.
Oh, we're in the same room.
I've escaped the Matrix. I finally seen another human being today.
And it's not your girlfriend.
And it's not, no.
How you doing?
I'm really good.
It's good to see you.
I know, it's been so long. Like, even though we've still done the show, I haven't seen you in about 2 weeks in person.
Yeah.
But more than not, like, 3 weeks.
Because Liam did the show.
Oh my God, I'm finally outside. Yeah. It's so weird. But I've been really good. I've been cracking on with all this work experience crap. Went to the BBC to see how an actual radio show that gets broadcasted is ran. We give them a good run for the money, I must say. But yeah, that's been really fun. I've got a lot of really interesting stuff in the pipeline. Like tonight I'm going to a special press showing of a film sort of thing, which should be a lot of fun. But anyway, how have you been? Been a while.
Yeah, I can't complain. I got a job.
Yay!
I'm working at the Bridgewater Hall, showing people to the seats, selling like programs and stuff.
Okay, this sounds awfully
familiar.
Yeah, a sense of deja vu here.
It's all the ushering, but without all the cleaning. It's amazing.
That's pretty cool. I know one of my friends used to work at the Bridgewater Hall, and a lot of the time it is more, let's say, classical musicians.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Like the Philharmonic and the Halle play there, they're both resident.
But once Henry Rollins did a spoken word there and he got in for free, so we all just went and it was really fun. And it was weird seeing just Henry Rollins, this ex-singer of Black Flag, stood on a giant stage speaking.
Yeah, I've booked in my shifts for the rest of November because it's casual work, so it's tell us when you want to work, we'll let you know if we've got the space. It's really, really ideal for me with uni. And most of it is classical, like the Halle and some Christmas stuff coming up. But I'm working when Billy Bragg's on.
Oh, cool.
I'm working when Katie Tunstall's on. There's something called 60s Gold. That sounds amazing. So, and some of the shifts, I don't know what I'm doing, but some of them, you just have to sit in on the performance and just watch the audience. So if I get to do that for like 60s Gold, fantastic.
You're just going to be there, like, disgust you.
Yeah. But besides that, the other big news, I went to Raw last night.
I walked in this morning and you was like slumped over your laptop, like almost dying.
Well, it was like 4 hours long. Because there was the whole 3 hours of Raw, plus two Superstars matches, plus a dark match. And it was a very, very wrestling heavy episode of Raw. There was very little in the way of in-ring promos or backstage segments. Because I think they know by now that the UK fans aren't going to put up with it. They need to do their A game when they're in the UK.
Yeah, because they obviously, it's kind of a rare occasion for them to do a wrestling show in
twice
the UK.
A year.
So we don't get it as much as like America do. Mm-hmm. So if we don't get to see any wrestling, people would just go, well, fuck you then.
And the main event, this is how good the main event is. I'm going to tell you who was in it, and just from what you know from me, you're going to know how good it was.
Okay.
It was a 3-on-2 match. The Shield versus CM Punk and Daniel Bryan.
Ooh, take it you were enjoying that one then.
Yeah. Got to see John Cena wrestle Antonio Cesaro, which Cena's been doing really well since he came back from his injury. And I'm currently wearing my Cesaro t-shirt, so I love that. The crowd were a bit annoying. There was lots of just chants. I hate chants for people that aren't there. Or chants for people not in the ring, because I think it's really disrespectful.
Yeah, so, it's almost like irrelevant.
Yeah, so if they're chanting for like Jerry Lawler or Justin Roberts, or there was a guy on like the floor seats dressed as Superman, and he kept getting chants.
Okay.
And I was like, just watch the wrestling. It just really annoyed me. And then there was a big Mexican wave sequence during the main event, which that was fine. It looked awesome on the screen. It was really fun to be part of. But then afterwards, they started chanting the worst chant any crowd can give. The We Are Awesome chant.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
self-congratulation.
And there was this one motherfucker, I'm sorry, I'll talk about this more when me and Alex do an episode of Have a Nice Day, but there was this one motherfucker who was like three rows in front and a bit to the left of where me and Alex were sat, and he was dressed like Bray Wyatt. Like, I'm not sure if he was actually dressed like Bray Wyatt or if that's his fashion sense. But he was wearing a Hawaiian shirt and a straw fedora.
Oh, God.
So it could have been either way. But he was being a dick all night. He was chatting for Chris Benoit.
Oh, that's just not cool.
And then when the Wyatt family came out, he started chanting Husky Harris, which was Bray Wyatt's wrestling gimmick before he was Bray Wyatt.
Oh, God.
And I just shouted at him, why would you dress like Bray Wyatt and chant Husky Harris?
Yeah.
And
the chanting for Chris Benoit thing.
Yeah, he was the only one doing it.
Yeah, that's bullshit. That's like the people who dressed as the Boston Massacre, marathon runners for Halloween. Like, just, it's a no-go zone. Let's keep it tasteful, please.
Yeah, and I tried to keep it as PG as possible when I was chanting because there was kids around.
Yeah.
Because it's fun to chant. It's fun to stand up and like, yes, yes, yes. And I don't understand the We The People chants. Because Antonio Cesaro, Jack Swagger, they've got a thing called The Real Americans.
Yeah.
Where they're pretty racist.
I think I remember you talking about
the bad guys.
Yeah.
But their thing is, they put their hand on their heart and they go,
We The People.
When you've got 10, 20, 30,000 people all shouting, We The People, clap, 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 clap. Do you just not get it?
Yeah, like, you're British. You're not the people. That's the point.
It was when Zeb Coulter came out, and he was like, all right, mates.
Oh, God.
Taking the piss out of us, and said the worst thing the British people ever did was give the world Mr. Bean.
Oh, that's not the worst. We've done way worse things, like this podcast.
No, I don't like Mr. Bean.
I like Mr. Bean.
Raw was good. I'm doing well. There's road work. Well, there's, like, building works behind my flat. So my flat shakes every morning.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's like your own personal alarm clock.
Yeah, it's getting really annoying.
You should just play the Godzilla theme, like, at a set time when the house starts shaking.
Or just have a bedside table with a cup of water, and then just look over and see it just, like, ripple.
And you wake up next to Jeff Goldblum.
Life finds a way.
Kieran, we gotta get out of bed.
Alright, let's crack on with some pretty big news.
What's all the shouting?
So, big TV news, big comic book TV news. Yeah? Our man, hey?
No, that's not what we're talking about.
You know, if you base it on Tom Pyre's, like, 10-issue Android Our Man series from the late 90s, be fine with that. That was a great comic.
I'm enjoying watching what people are trying to make from comics, because I believe Dayman had one issue before it turned into a movie franchise.
Dayman?
Daymen, do you know the Image comic? Oh, right. Is it Image?
Oh, the Boom Studios one.
Oh, the Boom Studios, yeah. Apparently that's been a movie after one issue.
I thought you were talking about, like, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Dayman.
No,
Fighter of the Night, man.
You do probably want that into a movie. But this is something a bit more obvious to be turned into something, because we've been talking about it for ages.
Netflix, you know this by now, you absolutely know this by now, but Netflix announced 13 episode series, followed by a mini series, starring, one of them's going to be Daredevil, one of them's going to be Iron Fist, one of them's going to be Luke Cage, and one of them's going to be Jessica Jones. And then afterwards they're going to do the Defenders of all of them together.
In essence, it's the Avengers of television.
Pretty much, yeah.
Because they're going to introduce all the characters via their own separate things and just bring them together for the team show, I guess.
It's Brian Bendis, the TV epic. Because if you're reading comics around 2002, 2003, when Bendis was writing both Daredevil and Alias, you had, obviously, Daredevil, Matt Murdock, the lawyer, but his two bodyguards were Luke Cage and Jessica Jones. And then, like, Iron Fist is Luke Cage's best friend.
Yeah.
So it's not like they've gone, well, this character and this character and this character and this character. There's a bond between these characters that's going to work.
Yeah, it's not like they've just thrown Ghost Rider in or something.
Yeah. Although, actually, no. If Neville Dean and Taylor can't make it work, I don't know if anyone can.
Yeah, like the Crank guys struggled with a Ghost Rider movie.
Yeah.
They would have seemed like the most obvious choice to make a go. Although, I'm sorry, hate me if you will. Just stop with Nicolas Cage. The man is obviously desperate for work. Do not go to someone who's desperate for work to do a big Marvel property thing.
But yeah, this is going to be very exciting because it's four of my favourite Marvel characters. Well, I've been saying it's three of my favourite Marvel characters, and I do also quite like Luke Cage. I've got nothing against Luke Cage. I'm not overly enthused by Luke Cage, but I love Daredevil, Iron Fist and Jessica Jones. Alias is one of the best Marvel comics of like the 2000s. Also the first Marvel comic to have the word fuck in it.
Wow, that's
uncensored.
Groundbreaking there.
Yeah, the Max imprint was created for Alias and it's still going like 10 years later.
This is going to be interesting because again it's the Netflix trial, which has worked for some but not for others.
It's worked more than it has.
Yeah, because like as much as like you love the Arrested Development thing, I did hear that it didn't perform as well as they hoped.
No, but I heard that it's pretty much a lock for another season.
It's good news, but Netflix has really been knocking it out of the park, and especially I feel that Marvel have maybe learnt from the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. being.
See, I don't. A lot of people have been saying that. I don't think so, just because with how recent S.H.I.E.L.D. has been.
Yeah.
It's not like they've gone. Like, the amount of time in between the S.H.I.E.L.D. ratings dropping and dropping and dropping and this announcement, it's not like they've gone, oh, we should just go to Netflix. Like, this deal has probably been in place for, like, been working on for at least a year or 2 years.
Yeah, I can understand, maybe.
I don't think this has anything to do with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. just because it's such a complex deal and such massive undertaking.
Yeah, Marvel are so ambitious with what they want to do with this expanded universe thing. And that's the, like, you could make it as good, as bad, as long as it fits in the universe, I have no real issue with it, because.
See, I disagree with that.
Do you want it to be its own?
No, I just want it to be good.
Yeah.
It seems really odd to say, as long as it's good or it's bad, as long as it fits in. Because I'm not a continuity nerd. I don't mind if something forsakes continuity, if it helps the story.
Yeah.
So I don't really. I'd rather read a good comic book than a comic book that makes sense within that universe.
It's a fair point. But
I think it's the same with the TV stuff.
Yeah, that's one of the issues I've had with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. though. It just doesn't feel
is true.
Universe. And that takes me out of the thing, because, like, sure, oh look, Nick Fury and stuff, but they don't feel like characters in the universe, so it doesn't make me want to watch it at all. So as long as it feels like it is the universe, and
the thing with S.H.I.E.L.D. is, it feels too much like in the real world than it does in the Marvel world.
Yeah, although Daredevil is prime for TV. That is, like, his character is essentially a TV character in the first place. So it's just going to be, like, a lawyer show.
I don't...
Law and Order with superpowers.
Yeah. It just seems like a kind of missed opportunity that they also have Punisher.
Yeah, maybe he'll show up as, like, a character throughout the rest of them, and then maybe he'll be the bad guy in The Defenders or something.
Yeah, who could be the bad guy? Like, it can't be something too cosmic.
Mordok. I want to see a Mordok spin-off. Mordok sitcom.
Or maybe Captain America 3. Because Captain America 2 is pretty heavy on bad guys.
Every Marvel film is pretty heavy. Like, they've already got bad guys up until the third one. Like, how many bad guys does Guardians of the Galaxy have? It's about four.
Yeah, it is about that.
That we know of.
Yeah. So, I think I'm most excited. I don't know, because I want Daredevil, but I want Iron Fist.
I'm really interested with the Iron Fist thing, because when you think about it, like, there's never actually been a proper Kung Fu television series, especially recently.
What about Kung Fu?
Well, I'm going to say recently.
Yeah.
But it's not been on in a while, especially with, you can't really say Kung Fu's known for its storylines and epic narrative telling. But I'm interested to see. Could you imagine? I was saying, just get the guy who did the raid to do every episode of Iron Fist. So then every episode has a badass fight that makes you tune in. Even if you don't give a damn about anyone, just tune in for the fight.
There's one like 5 minute action sequence that you're going to want to watch.
Yeah, it's like in this episode he's fighting while falling off a cliff or something. Just make up shit, even though that's technically G.I. Joe retaliation there. But
I'm really interested in seeing what they do. And like I say, Jessica Jones is a fantastic character. The best thing Brian Bendis has ever done for Marvel, and he's done a lot of good work for Marvel. Regardless of what you want to say, it's the truth.
Yeah, he's done a lot for Marvel, either way.
And Jessica Jones is the best thing he's done for Marvel.
I'd be interested, because the last thing I read with Iron Fist and Luke Cage was actually that Deadpool thing.
Yeah.
Imagine if the white man turns up as a villain. The episode directed by Quentin Tarantino.
I suppose Kingpin would be a logical choice.
Yeah, who would you cast as Kingpin?
Dean Norris.
Yeah, I can see that.
Hank from Breaking Bad.
Yeah, that's actually a really good casting. Yeah. I'd be interested if you cast Gandolfini before he passed. That would have been a fun Kingpin.
He was about the right size.
Yeah, that's maybe too soon in a way. But keep it taste.
I do kind of hope they do the Purple Man story with Jessica Jones, because it's such a... It's a raw, harrowing story. It's very, very uncomfortable, but it's a really good
story. Like when we're talking about the villains, sorry for the criticism towards Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. With these, you will have to bring in supervillains, because it's superheroes, so you have to bring in the superpowers. You've got to bring in the villain. And you can't just kind of half-ass it, really.
The thing with having Kingpin as a villain as well is each of the four TV shows, like Kingpin can be the Thanos of this.
Yeah.
So in the Daredevil TV show, it can be Daredevil versus Bullseye, but Bullseye's working for Kingpin. And in the Luke Cage TV show, it'll be Luke Cage versus whoever, but whoever is working for Kingpin. And
yeah, so, like, Kingpin's the spearhead.
Yeah.
The figure, the face of all the villains who...
Yeah. He's the kingpin of crime.
Yeah.
That's what I... It's not just, like, an evil superhero codename. That's his job.
Yeah, he is the kingpin. It's just who he is.
Yeah, he's in charge of crime in New York. Nothing happens in New York without him saying so.
Which is weird, because New York is overrun with some of the most powerful superheroes in the world, so it's weird that a guy actually has some form of crime syndicate in the Marvel Universe.
But I think we're getting a bit too speculative.
So all we know is that they've announced these series and we've just brought down.
Starting in 2015 and running for like 5 years.
Oh my god, Marvel.
We're going to be 30 by the time it's over.
Don't say that. That's really depressing. I'm going to be about 70. I'm going to be the age of Stan Lee before they even begin to close these Marvels.
Yeah, but when they finally bring in Thanos.
Yeah, Thanos is not going to be in a movie until maybe around 2045 or something. And it will just be Thanos walks into the screen, because technology will be so advanced by that point.
And just kills everyone with the Infinity Gauntlet.
Oh god, grim.
Okay, so let's move on to some reviews. I did have a music choice for this week. I was going to talk about the Pins album. But then last night, when I got home, about 11 o'clock, everyone on Twitter was raving about this new Metronomy song. So I'm going to play the new Metronomy song instead. It's called I'm Aquarius, and it sounds like this.
Just one fight and just one anniversary. So I never thought you'd be the one to up and leave. You said our love was written in the stars, but I never paid attention to my charts. And now I see how quick you must want to forget, 'cause you left the ring, I bore you with your cigarettes. Well, I can finish up if you don't want them, and I can take the ring back where I got it from. I can love it, I can leave it. You said, honey, yeah, best believe it, 'cause you're a novice and I'm a tourist. I'm not gonna say, I'm not gonna do. Yeah, I can love it, I can leave it. You said, honey, yeah, best believe it. believing, cause you're a Taurus, I'm Aquarius, and I'm not gonna say, I'm not gonna do. Never thought about it sentimentally.
It sounds less novelty than Metronomy have sounded in a while.
Yeah, I've only heard a few Metronomy songs, but they did sound...
They get old. Like, yeah. I like Metronomy a lot, but a lot of, like... I don't know if it's just because they get used in adverts a lot. Like, the look, it gets used in a load of adverts.
But that's the problem with music that's that accessible, really, because it does sound... It gets ripped off a bit too much, I guess.
But this song, I'm not going to talk about it for too long, but... It's a lot softer, it's a lot more measured and considerate than Metronomy's been in the past. It's a really interesting direction for them, and I like it. I had no idea they were coming back so soon, although I guess it's about the right time for another album.
Yeah, and that was a glowing endorsement, must I say. Mm. Well, I like it. Yeah, that's going on the box.
You know, I've had like less than 12 hours to listen to it.
Yeah. So there's no in-depth critique, say what I
say. Like, do you remember when the Radiohead album just came out?
Yeah, and just caught everyone off guard. Yeah,
and all the websites were just racing to review it. And I remember Drowned in Sound was saying, you'll get the review when the review's done. We're not going to review it just to get some hits on the site. We're going to sit down with this album, listen to it, learn it, and review it. So I don't want to spend... I don't want to do too many snap judgments on stuff.
Yeah, it's like whenever I walk out of a film, the last thing I really want to do is put my opinion on Twitter about it, because I'd rather people just read my review, because...
Well, I always say, I get so excited with films, especially comic book films. I came out of Spider-Man 3 giddy.
Yeah.
And then sat down and was like, wait a second. Oh God, what did I just watch?
So that's the sink in almost.
Yeah, so there's something to be said about just taking your time to cultivate an opinion.
Yeah.
But it is hard, because in this day and age, it's hard to cultivate your own opinion without being influenced by...
Everything else.
Yeah, everyone else's opinions, and I found myself doing that. But I like this song a lot. I'm looking forward to the new album, if and when there is one. It's, like I said, it's a really interesting direction for Metronomy, and I hope there's more like it.
We should aim to get one of our reviews on some form of box or any promo stuff once a week. Just our laziest critique of anything. We should just get it out there.
Well, friend and one-time co-host of the show, Neam Suggett, has a quote on a Marvel comic.
Nice, nice.
It's Marvel's, you know, the Stand, Stephen King's The
Yeah,
Stand.
Yeah,
yeah. I think it's one of the hardcovers or the Omnibus. A quote from Neam's review. Is about, I think it's about Mike Perkins' art. I'm sure he'll let us know on Twitter. So that's amazing. I thought that when he tweeted that, I thought that was amazing. I think he's had some stuff on some Image comics as well, but a Marvel one, that's huge.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. The problem is they have to actually listen to the show to get a quote. So listen to the show.
Okay, so that was Metronomy. I'm Aquarius. Good song, good band. I don't sound as enthused as I feel about it.
I think it's just because you're tired.
I'm pretty tired.
Yeah. The fact that you even listened to the song before you slept was madness in itself.
But we're going to move on to some TV from Sean.
I know, it's a rare occasion, but I've actually started watching a bit more TV lately.
Yeah, you were saying this on Facebook.
Yeah, I saw... I've seen a few episodes of The Blacklist with...
I don't know what that is.
It's the spy show with Ultron, with with James Spader. That, along with Sleepy Hollow, a lot of people admit it's not good, but they still watch it regardless. I also managed to catch the first episode of the Jonathan Rhys-Meyers Dracula, which we will not talk about on this podcast because it is one of the most boring and worst pilots of a TV show. Like, the point of a pilot is to grab your attention. It did not grab any form of my attention. However, I'm going to talk about the third series of a TV show.
Oh, I know what this is.
Which can actually count as its own thing.
Yes.
This is American Horror Story Coven. And there's been two episodes so far in the UK. And American Horror Story, it's the show that does its own interesting take on anthology sort of things, where it's not an anthology series, it's an anthology series. Yeah. It's not, every episode is not its own thing, every
it's
series.
It's not an anthology season, it's an anthology series, to use like American terms.
Yes, whereas something like The Twilight Zone has an episode where it's a different story.
Yeah.
American Horror Story brings back the same actors and the same people behind the scenes, like the directors and everything, to make a different story every season based on something in the horror in horror.
Yeah, because the second one was like set in an asylum, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was the first one like a haunted house?
The first one's called The Murder House, the second one was called Asylum, and this one's called Coven. So you can
witches.
You can work out the math. This one is based on a
Salem and stuff.
It's like a sheltered home for witches. It's set mostly in New Orleans, which is quite interesting.
It's kind of voodoo-y.
There's elements of it, because so far in the second episode, this is already getting straight into the nitty-gritty of things. They've addressed that there is in fact witches, but there's also voodoo magic, and there's a conversation in one of the episodes where one of the witches is talking to a voodoo magician. The voodoo magician hates them because, yeah, you stole most of our stuff. And there's a comparison between the hammer and the nail, which I quite liked. But the plot of this one, it's the same actors and stuff, but with a few new faces. Kathy Bates is actually in this series now as a racist old plantation owner who used to torture slaves. If you know anything about American Horror Story, if you're waiting for to jump the shark is well and truly already jumped before the...
So is this in the past, or is she just really old?
She's actually immortal. So this one, whereas Asylum was set in the past, like it was via mainly flashbacks, so it was set in the 60s sort of thing. This one's set in the now, and it's about this home for young witches who... They have to kind of shelter because the power they've done their powers in the open. They have to. It's similar to like
a halfway house.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's kind of like Xavier's mansion, really, because they trained them to like hone their powers, how to become more powerful witches without being open in the real world. And American Horror Story has a knack for making sure there's more than just that plot line. And in two episodes alone, we've already discussed creating monsters using slave torture. There's been the almost plot for plot version of Frankenstein addressed, and this is two episodes in. We've already put together a corpse and reanimated it, and it's been really interesting. It's a bit more withdrawn than season 2, because that was insane. Like, that had aliens. One of the episodes has a dance number in it. Because why not? It's from the guy who actually did Glee, so it was a really good dance number. But the guy does so many different... Like, I think he did Nip Tuck as well. He's done Glee. I can't remember the guy's name, but...
I know the guy you mean.
I love
him. He did The New Normal as well, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Which, I saw an episode of that. Do you know what... I told you what that show is about.
I remember the show coming out. It's about the gay couple.
Yeah, but the main character in it is a showrunner who works...
Who writes a musical TV show.
About a high school.
Oh, dear.
So, I was watching that when I was working at McDonald's. It was just on. Oh, fuck.
Yeah, this is some...
I've not had a chance to sit down and watch American Horror Story.
Like, I've been loving it so far. It's, the way it's shot goes throughout all three seasons. And it's shot very disjointed. Like, the camera's usually moving in a weird way. It's edited really strangely when it's getting just oddball. So it's like, the audio, like, it's just someone talking, but, like, it's edited, so obviously their face is moving around and it's different shapes that their faces are pulling and stuff. The cameras are always in really interesting places, like there's diagonal stuff. It's also pretty dark, like I've already mentioned the slave aspect. Like, the first bit of this season is Kathy Bates torturing slaves. And, God, it's... we've also had a lot of other really just harsh, harsh. This has probably been the darkest of the season so far.
They're probably like figuring out what they can get away with.
Well, they can. They get away with more than murder, shall we say? Like murder is just murder happens all the time in American Horror Story. But I'm interested to see what else they bring into it, because Asylum's well known for just going mental. And even Murder House, even though it was a lot more withdrawn than the other two later series, it still ends up going crazy. Yeah. So I'm just waiting for Coven. It's been two episodes in. I'm waiting for that point. It's heading there quickly, but I'm waiting for the point where it just goes, yep, Godzilla shows up or something, because I would not put it past them. American Horror Story is a really good TV series, especially if you're a fan of something like Stephen King sort of stuff.
Yes, yeah, if you like Stephen King, if you like Twilight Zone, if you like, say,
Lovecraft, like if you like, if
Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks is a good one. If you're a fan of horror, especially the sort of like very nerdy sort of horror, if you're a fan of the stuff that things stem from that create today. So
a metaphysical horror.
If you're a fan of the Guillermo del Toro Simpsons intro, you'll like American Horror Story. But Kieran's going to go, speaking of old school things, we're going to go pretty old school if I'm looking right at your notes here.
So, I've been feeling pretty lonely recently, and I don't know what to do. I've not seen you in like 3 weeks. And sometimes you just want to go where everybody knows your name.
Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name. They're always glad you came. You wanna be where you can see our troubles are all the same. You wanna be where everybody knows your name. You wanna go where people know people are all the same. You wanna go where everybody knows your name.
And I've been watching
How long have you been working?
Like 3 days.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So I've been watching a lot of Cheers over the past few week or so, and it holds up so well. It's so sharp. And I watched a few clips of it when we were preparing for the quiz, because we were doing that the catchphrases round.
Yeah.
And originally I was going to have everyone saying Norm. But I couldn't really find one on YouTube that I liked.
Yeah.
I ended up falling down a YouTube hole of just watching clips. I was like,
yeah.
At some point when I have the time, I need to start watching the Cheers from the start.
I always end up in that YouTube hole where you click on one video and then it's 6 hours later.
Yeah. But Cheers, if for some reason you've not seen it, it's about a retired baseball player, recovering alcoholic called Sam, who owns a bar in Boston called Cheers, and he takes on a new waitress called Diane, he's very macho, she's very up herself, intelligent, and the most of the show is like the tension between the two of them.
Yeah, it's just conflict.
Yeah, it's like Ross and Rachel before Ross and Rachel, like whatever Bruce Willis and the other girl's name were in Moonlighting.
Yeah. It's so weird to say that, that just makes me feel old when you say this is before Friends.
Yeah.
Because Friends, for me, feels like an eternity ago.
But there's all... the great thing is, I've watched, like, 8 episodes, and you get right into the supporting characters. Straight away, you'll get like, okay, this is the Norm episode, and now this is the Coach episode. And there's been, like, 2 Coach episodes so far.
Yeah.
And Carl has had an episode, like... It doesn't feel like Sam and Diane, Ted Danson and Shelley Long, are the main characters. It really, even more than ensemble shows like... I know Scrubs is massively influenced by Cheers, even if it doesn't look like it.
Yeah.
I know from...
I was saying, the way you were talking about each episode being to a specific like character, that sounds like it influences pretty much every American show that you currently watch.
Yeah, but more than that, because... something like Scrubs, which is obviously very influenced by Cheers, it's still, okay, these are the main characters, whereas Cheers doesn't really feel like that. It's more like The Simpsons than anything. So, you know how you'll have an episode of The Simpsons where the episode revolves around Mo, and it's Mo's episode.
Yeah.
And like, The Simpsons can do that because it has so many characters in such a small physical voice cast.
Yeah, because... Like,
I think if Cheers could get away with having that many characters, they probably would.
Yeah. Well, I like where Cheers comes from, because I've worked behind a bar, yeah. And I understand that people come in and you listen to their stories whilst you're serving them.
And it's got... I think it's Community's got me thinking about this as well, because Community kind of broke down the glass and like explained what a bottle episode was. Now I know what a bottle episode is. Cheers is a bottle series.
Yeah, because the entire thing is just the bar.
Yeah, it's like the Royal Family, how they never really leave the living room of the Royal Family.
Like, you see a glimpse when the door opens, but you're not allowed outside.
Yeah. It's like that. There's two rooms in the bar and the office, and that's it. There's an upstairs that you never see. There's like a classy restaurant that they have to put on a jacket if they want to go upstairs. Because there's one episode where the pipes freeze, so they have to go to the restaurant upstairs to go to the loo. So there's a queue of people waiting to borrow this one nice jacket.
Funny.
It's really good. And the cast, Ted Danson, Shelley Long, George Wendt as Norm, John Ratzenberger. If you don't know his face, you know his voice. Because he's in every Pixar film. He's the Pixar Lucky Charm.
Yeah.
He's Ham. He's the Abominable Snowman in Monsters, Inc.
He is, in essence, the voice of Pixar. Because I don't think there is actually a Pixar movie that he's not in.
No, there's not.
Like,
there's absolutely not.
Is he in Brave?
Yeah, he's in Brave. I don't know where, but he's in Brave.
Wow. Like, the guy's definitely got his work cut out for him.
Yeah. Because I just don't think they'd want to do a film without him.
It is the iconic voice, though.
Yeah.
Like, if you hear, like, his voice, you'll just automatically think Ham from Toy Story. Yeah. Because it's just his voice.
Well, I think he does a good job of... Because it's Ham, but... the Abominable Snowman... It still sounds like Ratzenberger, but it doesn't sound like Ham.
Yeah.
I think he's a really good voice actor.
Yeah, he's kind of like the H. John Benjamin, really. He does his own voice, but it still sounds like different people.
Because I thought I'd have a real hard time watching Bob's Burgers after watching Archer, but you really don't.
You don't. Because it's H.M. Benjamin, I'd watch him do, like, voice anything. Like, I could... Like, how I'd watch a nature documentary if he did the narration for it as Archer, because that would be amazing.
Going into
the danger zone.
Cheers. Brilliant. What else can I say? It's fucking Cheers. It's not really me recommending it as me saying this is what I've been watching this week. It's
like, it's not that you're recommending it, it's just that it's already earned respect.
I am recommending it, but I don't need to recommend it.
Yeah, it's...
Like, we've all been sick off school and watched Channel 4 at like 12 in like midday. And we've all watched Cheers.
Yeah.
So yeah, Sean has a film which I'm a bit heartbroken about. That I'm never going to see in the cinema.
I know, you are on your own. A bit like the cast of this film.
And you have a go at me.
I know, I do try, but I didn't write that in 3 days. I'm going to talk about Gravity, the new Big Little film from Alfonso Cuarón, because it's a huge movie which doesn't do a lot, but not in a bad way. The plot of Gravity, you have Sandra Bullock is playing a scientist on her first ever space expedition. They're going to repair a satellite, and she's teamed up with veteran astronaut, played by George Clooney, who is just playing George Clooney, because in space he's still trying to charm the women. I was just laughing, they're just floating around in space, and George Clooney goes up to Sandra Bullock and goes... Hey, you've got really nice eyes. And it's like, God's sake, George. And
do you think that that George Clooney didn't know they were rolling?
Like, I like to think that George Clooney, they didn't even give him a script. They just said,
"Be George Clooney."
George, you got this. Come on, man. You're a spaceman. Chicks dig spaceman, and chicks dig you. But
according to George Clooney, chicks dig the car.
Chicks take the shuttle. But whilst they're repairing this just craft that's floating around space, there's some debris heading their way, and over the radio, Houston's just like, "You'll be fine, don't worry, it's not in your trajectory." But yeah, Houston, we have a problem, and it is heading their way, and it does in one of the most terrifyingly shot ways. You've seen bits of it in the trailer, and one of the beautiful things about the trailer, it shows nothing of this movie. You go in knowing the first 5 minutes at best, and then the rest of it, it's just, you're just in for a ride, really, because...
I want to see it so much.
Yeah, it's such a refreshing way to do trailers in a world where everything is just... Yeah, nice. Where everything's just broadcast. It's like, oh my god, I don't know what happens in this movie. What a change. But the rest of the movie, it's a survival movie where George Clooney and Sandra Bullock have to... It's like open water in space, because they have to figure out, oh shit, we're stranded in space now. We have 90 minutes, because it's a really clever movie. Like, don't
Is
listen-
it in real time?
No, not really, but don't listen to, was it Chris Hart, Chris the astronaut guy?
Oh, Chris Hadfield, yeah.
Chris Hadfield, don't listen to him, this is accurate enough. It's, as a film goer, this is scientific as it gets, like, it's very, very right with what it's doing. And George Clooney, when the debris hits, he goes, right, figuring out the speed that's going, we have about 90 minutes before it goes entirely full circle and comes back. Mm-hmm. So there's a threat level to the film as well. So they have to figure out how to get out of space and back to Earth before the debris comes back and kills them. And that's while they're running out of air. They're running out of everything, pretty much. Like, the temperatures are rapidly fluctuating, so it's getting really hot at one point, then it's freezing, there's like ice crystals coming on the monitors and stuff. And it's such a tense movie. This is the tensest thing I've seen since the last 15 minutes of Argo, because the entire movie I'm just like, oh my god, oh my god. Because the debris is almost like Jaws, because like, there's a part where it doesn't even telegraph that it's coming back. They're just doing something, and in the background you just see, whoom. I'm like, oh fuck, oh shit, and oh my god, everything, like, fuck space. Like, if you're thinking of trying to do space travel or anything, if you want to be an astronaut, don't watch Gravity, because space is a bitch.
Well, Lady Gaga's going to do the first concert in space.
That does not surprise me, because she's been in space since her first album. But Gravity is a really tense movie, but it's also beautiful. This is one of the best special effects, like, based movies in a while. Like, you just forget that it's all shot in a green room, essentially. Like, it's just Sandra Bullock and George Clooney in a room just talking in a spacesuit, like, really. But the entire, all the special effects, it's absolutely gorgeous. Like, Alfonso Cuarón, the man knows what he's doing by this point. He's past proven himself.
Did Children of Men.
Yeah, Children of Men, a great low-budget dystopian thriller with Clive Owen.
Yeah. And he made the very right choice for Clive Owen to always be on camera.
Yeah, which is always a good choice because it's Clive fucking Owen. But Gravity is, like... This is another case of it's already earned its respect. Everyone knows Gravity's great. Like, you don't have to listen to me. You've probably already seen it. I'm sorry. But if you haven't, and I'm talking to both Kieran and the audience, go see it. It's such a beautifully made movie. It's well crafted. It builds atmosphere like mad. It's one of those films... I know. It's one of those films where there's power to the ambience, where it's silent in parts, but it's because of how powerful, like, the tension and the scene is. Although you always get that one guy in a couple of rows back to you.
It's probably the same guy who was at Raw.
Yeah, he was, like, I didn't check if he was in a... He's there with a space helmet and a Hawaiian shirt. I turn around because this one guy turns to his friend and he does that thing where you try and be quiet by whispering really loudly in a quiet cinema and goes... the sound's not working. Oh my god! But in essence, the same guy did complain that the entirety of the film is set in space. So definitely not for him, but definitely for everyone else, because Gravity is such a great movie. I'll be shocked if this doesn't win Best Special Effects, because the 3D, I've not even touched on that. This is the best example of 3D I've seen since probably either Dread or Avatar.
I'll have to see it.
I never saw this in IMAX because the IMAX was sold out. I saw it in like a big screen anyway, and the 3D was really good in the big screen, but I was just like, oh, I need to go back and see this in IMAX because the sound's impressive. There's bits where I flinched and tried dodging the 3D, and there's a bit where it's just something simple as water in zero gravity just floating, and it looks like it's above the people sat in front of me, and it's so immersive that there's one point where there's debris coming down, and I was just like, oh no, it's gonna come through the ceiling and hit everyone in the audience, and I was just getting so wrapped up in gravity, I was actually losing my mind a bit, much like Sandra Bullock does for the entire film. But yeah, such a fucking great movie. Like, I'm glad we're finally getting the blockbuster. I'm finally glad we're getting good movies in 2013, actually.
Good original blockbusters, like The Room.
Well, I was going to bypass summer and say we're finally getting the summer we should have had in October and November with Thor and this now. But yeah, such a great movie.
So, I don't have a film. What I'm going to talk about, I'm not going to talk about for too long. What we were saying about Netflix earlier, about how they're just revolutionising everything. What they've been doing recently.
How have we still not got advertising from Netflix yet, by the way?
What they've been doing recently is they've been putting on a lot of stand-up specials, like Netflix original stand-up specials.
Also the original, they've made these specials.
Yeah, like they've commissioned these specials and they've gone and recorded, filmed them. Okay. So I know they did, is it Mark Maron? The guy who does WTF podcast.
Yeah, the WTF with Mark Moran.
Yeah, Mark Moran, that's it, yeah.
Yeah.
And I know they've done a few Netflix originals, and one that just came out on the 1st of November, and it's on both UK and US Netflix. It's by my favourite comedian, Aziz Ansari. It's called Buried Alive. I'm not going to go into it too much, because all it's going to be is me saying, and then he said this, and then he said that, and no one wants to, I don't want to be that guy repeating someone's joke. So I'll put in a bit now.
But imagine if marriage didn't exist, and you're a guy and you ask a woman to get married. Imagine what that conversation would be like. You'd be like, hey, so you know, we've been hanging out together all the time, spend a lot of time together and everything. Yeah, I know. I want to keep doing that till you're dead. What? I want to keep hanging out with you till one of us dies. Put this ring on your finger so people know we have an arrangement. Who's that guy? It's a priest. I want you to swear to God you won't back out of this deal. What's he wheeling in? It's a cake with two tiny dolls that look like us. Eat a slice. Now beat a little bit to me. This is really strange. Why are we doing this? Tax purposes.
Yeah, I'm not going to spend too long on this because no one wants to listen to me.
You already know if you want to hear an Aziz Ansari stand-up special. And if you listen to this show, you should want to hear that. Because this is actually a pretty big deal for Netflix to do an exclusive on. Because he is one of the biggest comedians around at the minute.
Although, it's still at the point where if anyone asks me who's your favourite comedian, I say Aziz Ansari, then I have to go, he was in Scrubs, he's in Parks and Recreation. Have you seen Funny People? No.
Yeah, this is the end.
Yeah. No one in the UK seems to know who he is. Everyone I speak to has no idea.
See, I find that almost weird.
Yeah.
It's just sort of out of my world.
30 minutes or less.
Yeah, that's not a good reference.
I thought it was alright.
No one saw it.
Yeah, true. Like, I went to go see it because
it was seen by 30 people or less.
Okay, so let's move on to your video game.
Well, it's an interesting video game that I've actually got, considering my film of the week was Gravity, because I bought a little game called FTL on Steam,
yes,
which stands for Faster Than Light.
So did you not get the Humble Bundle?
No.
There was a Humble Bundle a few weeks ago that had, like, FTL and, like, five other games that I wanted.
Yeah, I didn't... I forgot. I admittedly didn't have time because I've been that busy.
Like Fez was in that bundle.
I've already beat Fez. Yeah. But FTL, it's a space travel game. It's kind of a simulator meets a game. You get... You start out with a spaceship. You can choose through the various selections. You have to unlock more as you go along through the game. And each spaceship has its rooms. It's shown like a blueprint almost of the ship. And you've got
I think the easiest way to explain it in a video game term is, you know, when you look on top of a Sims house.
Yeah, that's a great way. It's not as detailed as the Sims because it is. It's a very 2D style game. Yeah. It's very independently made and it's very pretty as well. The soundtrack's really good. But you've got the spaceship, and each room of the spaceship, you've got like oxygen, which keeps oxygen throughout the spaceship. You've the engine rooms, you've the weapons room, you've the cockpit, and it's kind of like running your own little Star Trek ship, because you've got your crew and you have to like move them to what rooms you'd rather them be in, because if there's a crew member in a room, the room becomes more amplified, but you also have to send crew people to fix rooms if they get damaged. And it's a space flight simulator where you've got to click to a random event occurs. This is kind of like an RPG, like, but in the essence of like Dungeons and Dragons or something, because every time you go to a new space, it's a random occurred event where you choose what option you want, and some options are beneficial, some options are not. It's like some options give you more scrap, which you can then use for more equipment at the shops, or some events trigger battles which have certain like parameters. And it's the combat's actually really fun as well, because it's essentially point and click, but combat, where you have to select your weapons, which you've got, target whatever rooms you'd rather attack their ships with. I always go for the engine rooms, because that stops them running away if you're kicking their ass. And the combat's really fluid, it works really well. And the plot of the story is, you just have to move along, you create your own story with the plots that you go along. So it is very much like playing like a tabletop game, but on PC. And the big lying threat is, as you move along these worlds, there's this giant line that just says warning, and that is the rebel ships that are hunting you down. So you have to basically get away from that, because those rebel ships will kill the fuck out of you.
So I've got this game, I've not really played it much, mostly because I seem to be hoarding Steam games for my eventual Steam box.
Yeah.
Because I've mentioned multiple times I prefer doing everything on my TV than I do to my computer.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get a Steam box eventually, and then I'll have fucks on the games already.
Yeah.
But I heard this described once, I can't remember where, someone compared it to XCOM. And then I mentioned that, I said, oh, I heard it's a bit like XCOM in that, like, what happens matters, and if you lose something, it's gone, and the random nature of it. And my friends have mentioned that too, like, oh no, it's not like XCOM at all, don't be such a dick.
See, I can see where they're coming from with the XCOM thing, because you'll probably break your heart again playing FTL, because you can name your crew, and when they die, they're dead for good.
Yeah.
So you can, like I remember when you were talking about XCOM, where you named all the people after your friends, and when someone died, you actually took it a little personally, and it proper got you absorbed. So you can do that with FTL. You can name your ship, you can buy extra parts, you get drones and stuff, and there's a lot of extra stuff to do in the game. But yeah, it's simply...
Oh, drones.
Yeah.
I was wondering why you'd get drawings.
Ah,
not because the way you say drawings.
Drones.
Yeah.
Fair enough. It's
drawings.
Yeah, it's like the unfinished swan in space. But it's quite simply, it's just a strategy game, which is ridiculously compelling, because every time you play it, it's completely different with all the events. There's always similar stuff, but, for example, I'm a bit of a ruthless space captain, apparently, because if I ever come across something, it's like, you find a distress beacon, this spaceship is on fire, you don't know whether it's a trick, do you board and try and help? I'm always like, no, I'm not doing that at the lives of my crew. I'm like the Spock of FTL, because I'm just logical throughout. But it's pretty heartless, and I do feel a bit bad about stuff I do, even though they're just little sprites. Later on in the game as well, interesting about the actual combat, because as well as firing the weapons at the other ship, they can board your ship as well via teleportation, so it's very Star Trek again, and your crew have to go fight them off. So the more crew you have, the more advantageous it is, so you don't want to kill the people on your ship.
Yeah.
And God, it's the best simulator. It's a simulator in the best way possible, because you have to manage all this stuff while still playing the game.
Yeah.
And even the game's got so much going on that even recommends pausing before every jump, because you need to make sure that when you get out of the jump, you're paused so you can plan everything before they just destroy you. But FTL, it's at the minute it's £3.50.
Yeah, I do have it. I bought it with the last Humble Bundle. I've just not really played it.
Yeah, it's dirt cheap. It's a really good game as well that I recommend on this podcast.
So, moving on to the final chapter. And speaking of video games, I mentioned about a month ago about the Fables
video game. I think it's about 3-4 weeks ago now. Yeah.
So, I was like, I haven't read Fables in a while.
Yeah.
Let's catch up with Fables.
Which, even, it's the perfect time to do that. I can imagine a lot of people are. Yeah.
Well, also, Bill Willingham has announced that with issue 150, it will come to an end.
Ooh.
So, it's on, like, 125, 130 now. So, they've got about 2 years to go. And it breaks my heart that it's ending. But the past few stories have broke my heart in a worse way. It's going full on, like, Joss Whedon.
Oh, like, say goodbye to your favourite characters.
Yeah, full on like George R.R. Martin.
Well, with you saying that, I can understand why Telltale have maybe picked Fables as their game, because, like The Walking Dead, you get involved with the characters, and they might not be around for as long as you maybe want them.
It's like I said, the problem with the game was it's set in the past, you know.
Yeah.
But the comic doesn't have any problem with that.
Nope.
Lots of people dying. All my favourites dying.
I can imagine if you've played the game, which is a prequel for those who didn't know, jumping on Fables now, you probably don't have that many characters still left from the game.
I'd say anyway, just go back and read Fables from the start, because that's what I did. I read after The Wolf Mongols, like, okay, I'm going to go back to issue one, read what I've got, and then see where I need to carry on from.
Like, it's pretty easy to pick up the books, like, for the trades, because Fables is one of the really popular comic books.
If you go to Amazon and go on Amazon Marketplace, you can get the big 10 issue hardcovers for like a tenner each.
Okay, that's pretty good.
So that's what I'd recommend doing. But if you didn't listen to the Fables, the Wolf Among Us episode, Fables is about a community of people who are all storybook characters. So you've got the Big Bad Wolf, Snow White, Prince Charming, Jack Horner, Rose Red, Goldilocks, Three Bears, all that sort of stuff.
And it doesn't even seem to stem from just fairy tales. It's fictional work. Like, because you get a few people from Dickens, you get a few people from, like, Ichabod Crane's a character in the game.
Yeah, that's true. So it's more like folklore.
Yeah.
And when you read Jack of Fables, which was the spin-off that lasted 50 issues, it starts to go more sci-fi.
Yeah, because I believe that even Frankenstein's monster is a character in the Fables universe.
Yeah, and Bigby Wolf, the Big Bad Wolf, is the Wolfman.
Yeah, because he's the wolf from everything.
Yeah, he's the god of wolves.
Yeah, so he's the wolf from Red Riding Hood, he's the wolf from
the Three Little Pigs.
Yeah.
The Four Little Pigs.
Yeah.
which is a reference to Fables that you'll get or you won't.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Wizard of Oz stuff towards the later comics, which I've really enjoyed.
It's a bit, like,
because Wizard of Oz is all public domain. Yeah. Anyone can do anything.
Dorothy's not all there in Fables, if I remember rightly.
She's only just shown up fairly recently, actually. But you're definitely right on that.
Yeah. But
Cinderella is basically James Bond.
Yeah, it's kind of like a gritty take. Like, yeah. It sounds really difficult to describe without making it sound cliche by saying it's gritty fairy tales in a modern day setting, because that's basically Hollywood now.
Yeah.
But this did it way before
this
all
like,
that.
It's like over 10 years old.
Yeah.
And it's really good comics, really good storytelling, the art. Mark Buckingham does the majority of the art, but then you'll get, I guess, Sean McManus coming on to do some stuff, or Barry Kitson's been doing some stuff recently. Mike Allred from FF did some of the early issues. Like, whenever there was like a Pinocchio-themed issue, it seems Mike Allred was drawing it, which because Pinocchio's got such an like, exaggerated head.
Yeah.
It's great. But if the story really lies in the characters and your connection to the characters, and they're not the characters that you know from being a kid, really.
Yeah, they've grown up.
Yeah, like, stuff has happened to them in, like, the hundreds of years that they've been...
I think we nailed it when we described it. It's kind of like Who Framed Roger Rabbit of, fairy tale creatures.
It's definitely the best way to put it. And characters who aren't important in the first 50 to 100 issues are important now. And characters go away and they don't come back. And like, if you read like the first like 30 issues, Beauty and the Beast aren't that important. But then all of a sudden... they're really important, and they've stayed being important.
Yeah, so it feels more like an actual world that you're going into than just these are the characters and everyone is important.
And like, the janitor turns out to be the greatest hero like the Fables have ever known.
Well, he was the greatest hero in Scrubs.
Not that sort of janitor. And even like, I was reading a recent issue, and not even a supporting character, like a background character, died. That was heartbreaking. But I think the best thing Fables does is it brings in new villains very well. Because, you know, after a series has a defining villain, and they defeat the defining villain, but the series keeps on going.
Yeah.
It's really hard to bring it in without seeming like you're trying... I think.
Sorry to go back to The Walking Dead, but this has sounded like The Governor, for instance, where they keep trying to top The Governor.
Yeah,
but,
with like Negan.
Yeah, and it's kind of just the same again, in a way.
And I know a lot of people, I think they pulled it off in the end, but people had that sort of issue with Breaking Bad, because after Gus, where do you go? And it's like, well, Nazis, it's like, oh, really? But I think...
The Wolfenstein method.
Yeah, I think they pulled it off in the end with Breaking Bad. But for a while, it was kind of like, where do you go from Gus? And I think Fables does it really, really well, because they have the adversary. And they're the adversary for like 75 issues, and then they defeat him. It's like, well, where do you go from there? And then it's the Boogeyman. Like, they never call him the Boogeyman, but he's the creature under your bed. He's the creature. He's called Mr. Dark.
So he's kind of like Jude Law's character in Rise of the Guardians. He's never called the Boogeyman, but I think he's called like Shadow or Nightshade or something.
Yeah, he's called Mr. Dark in this. He's just like that creepy feeling on the back of your neck in like a top hat. But then then when they defeat him, where do you go from there? And they've brought in this new character called Brandish, who just instantly, I loathe him more than I loathed any character in Fables so far.
He's the Joffrey of Fables.
Yeah, he really is. So, go read Fables. It's fairly easy to catch up on. There's a lot of it, but it's really, really good. Read Fables, play Wolf Among Us. So I'd recommend playing Wolf Among Us first, so you don't know who lives or who dies, obviously. Well I guess you kind of do, because I've said which characters are in Fables.
Right. But
the two main characters in Wolf Among Us are the two main characters in Fables.
You should play the Wolf Among Us anyway, because Telltale again. It's Telltale.
Walking Dead in 2 weeks.
Yeah, so they're going to be running like side by side as well, which Telltale are going to end up just being like television series where it's like, this day's got this episode, this day's got this episode.
I'm fine with that.
Waiting for the Breaking Bad point and click prequel.
That's what Better Call Saul's going to be. But what have you got for us?
I'm just going to quickly talk about this comic because we are going. We've had a bit of a longer episode this week. It's been ages since I actually read a Spider-Man book.
Because you're an idiot.
I know. I don't.
Superior Spider-Man's Right.
I know your feelings on it, and you have lent me it, so I have read some of it, I guess, but I've not bought any Spider-Man comics in a while. So I decided to pick this one up. It's on the second issue, so I'm just going to kind of briefly touch upon both issues of it. And that's Marvel Knights Spider-Man by Matt Kintz on the writing, and the art's by Michael Rudy and Val Staples. This is actually a really interesting book because...
Yeah, it's weird.
It's weird. That's like, have you read?
Yeah, I read the first issue.
Yeah. It's a hard thing to explain in words. It appears to be following some kind of similar thing to Avengers Arena in an odd way. Because, like,
Trials.
Arcade makes an appearance and he seems to be the man behind everything.
Well, as far as I can tell, it's Spider-Man versus 99 of his enemies.
Yeah, I love what this book's called. It's called 99 Problems. Yeah. And basically, Peter Parker walks... He accepts a job as a freelance photographer and he walks into this mysterious building where Madame Web is there. And she just says to him, yeah, you now have to solve the riddle of 99 problems. And he's like, is Peter Parker? He's just like, what? Like, what are you on about? He's just jokey. Then just, it appears that something explodes and then he wakes up. Doesn't know what's happened. He's been poisoned. He's completely delirious. Which, may I add, is portrayed really beautiful.
Yeah, Marco Rudy.
Like, a similar thing I could... go to, it's kind of similar to the work that's been done on Animal Man and stuff like that.
Well, Marco Rudy was a fill-in artist on Swamp Thing.
Yeah, it's the sort of, like, very reminiscent of someone like Rotworld, where there's absolutely tons going on the page at once. Like, there's one bit where it's Peter Parker's spider sense just going mental because of the amounts of threats that are currently after him. And it just forms with his thoughts in the shape of a spider. Yeah. And in between it, it's got the panels of what he's doing in the room. And it's just so impressive. And already we've got some pretty heavy hitters. Like,
yeah.
I like the first episode where it starts out as a haunted house sort of theme, where he has to fight, like, Frankenstein's monster. He has to fight Morbius, Jack-O-Lantern, which is kind of similar to the news you had on Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And in the second issue, already we've had Sandman... We've got, like, I'm pretty sure Mysterio was in it. The second issue introduces Shocker, Sandman, Mysterio. So we're already getting, like, some of the big Spider-Man villains. Which I'm interested because there is 99 of these that they've somehow got to manage 99 villains. And she never says Spider-Man villains. So are we going to be like, Spider-Man's going to have to fight, like, Thanos or something at some point? Like, all right, there's Doctor Doom. Like Venom, we're just gonna throw in things that we could just.
Yeah, the great thing about it as well is it's Marvel Knights comics, so Venom can show up and it doesn't have to be Flash Thompson. It can be Eddie Brock.
Yeah,
it's not in continuity.
Yeah, because this is Peter Parker as well. Like we mentioned, this isn't Otto Octavius. This is like
so Otto Octavius can show up as Doc Ock.
Yeah, like Doctor. Well, he probably will, but he'll have to figure out 99 villains.
Yeah, they're not gonna.
I'm pretty sure Doctor Octopus is gonna be one. Like this is more villains than the Lego Marvel game. But I'm ridiculously interested to see who else can show up. It's almost like cameos in a weird way. Yeah. It's like who is going to turn up next. It's the Royal Rumble of Spider-Man.
I was just about to say that.
It's so interesting.
I was just about to say that.
And for people who maybe are not hugely into reading comic books, you're just interested in maybe the characters. If you're interested,
honestly, I wouldn't recommend this to people because
maybe it's a bit too chaotic.
The thing is, I don't understand this question. But have you read this question when people say, "How do I read it?"
That's a fair point.
To me and you and to a lot of the listeners, it's very instinctive to read, even just like Watchmen, where it's just 9-panel grids.
Yeah.
Like that's very, it's like left to right, then left. But to someone who doesn't read comics, they don't know how, they just look at a page full of art and they don't know how to follow it.
Yeah.
So I think with something like this, and I love Marco Rudy and I love that he's getting like a spotlight like this, I just don't think it's a great...
Yeah. Also, I'll just let you read the last page because it's relevant to something we talked about earlier. That bit there, which is a great little ending to where we're heading.
Ace.
Yeah.
Because there was a really, really good comic quite a few years ago now called Final Crisis Escape. Final Crisis Aftermath Escape, which was obviously after Final Crisis. And it was written by Ivan Brandon, and the art was by Marco Rudi, who draws this. And it was the prisoner in the DC Universe.
Nice.
And imagine that, was drawn by Marco Rudi.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Like, the thing I'm going to say about this book is, if you're maybe not new to comics, if you've not been reading anything Spider-Man, it's a pretty good book to jump on.
Yeah.
Because it's nothing to do with anything, really, in the most complimentary way possible.
Yeah.
It's not something you need to know a huge amount of what's happening with Marvel. But the artwork is just... It's the art that grabs me, because there's so many things going on, because there's so many different styles of artwork. Like, you've got some ridiculously detailed stuff, but then you've got more of a cartoony style paneling.
Yeah.
Then you've got almost like signs, like, there's a bit involving almost Spider-Man's fears coming out because of an Uncle Ben thing that's in issue one, I believe, where it just looks like a toilet man, but with like iconography almost.
Yeah, and some great work, some great collaboration between.
Yeah.
The
also,
whole team.
I heard this isn't the only Marvel Knights thing that's going to be happening. They're going to be doing some for the
Marvel Knights Hulk and Marvel Knights X-Men.
Yeah, which should be quite interesting, especially if it's along the same lines as this.
I think Marvel Knights Hulk is by Joe Keating and. I'm not sure who's doing the art, and I'm not sure who's doing the X-Men one either. But Joe Keating's a really good writer.
Yeah, I'm always a fan of stuff that's like this experimental with trying to tell a comic book story. And whereas in the past I've complained about something like Batman Superman, where I just could not figure out how to read it or what was happening, this is much more of a linear idea. It's basically Spider-Man has to fight 99 guys. This is what's happening, and he doesn't know what's happening. So that's basically the plot, and it's simple enough to follow because of how complicated like everything else is. But yeah, I'm really enjoying the book. It's I think there's 5 issues of it overall as an arc. Might carry on, but we don't know just yet.
I don't think it's gonna. I think it's a very self-contained story.
Okay.
There might be a sequel somewhere down the line
where it's Marvel Knights everyone.
But so I think that's the show.
Yeah.
It's good to see
we've had so much to talk about this episode.
So if people wanted to speak to you online, where would they go?
People would speak to me online via Facebook and Twitter @S_Keeney and also at rantoveruk.wordpress.com for all the at the minute not so latest film reviews. There's gonna be more coming up very soon though. But where can everyone find everything about you as you most lovingly like me to put?
Twitter and shit. about.me/KingImpulse for my Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, other podcast, Have a Nice Day, this podcast, which you can also find at www.enthusiacast.com, where facebook.com/enthusiacast, twitter.com/enthusiacast. Enthusiacast.podomatic.com. We are on Stitcher.com somewhere.
We're on everything.
Yeah.
That's your very own humble bundle from us.
So thank you for listening to this extra long return episode for Sean.
Return of the
It doesn't really fit.
No.
So yeah, he's Sean Keeney, I'm Kieran Shiak, and we'll see you next week.
See you later.
This is Ground Control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade, and the papers want to know whose shirt you wear. Now it's time to leave the capsule if you dare. This is Major Tom to Ground Control. I'm stepping through the door, and I'm floating in a most peculiar way, and the stars look very different today. For here
sitting in a tin can.